Welcome to the Weekly Digest from Personalized Intelligence. It is Tuesday, June 9th, 2026, and you are listening to our Technology Edition.
Today, we are examining the fundamental shift from software experimentation to physical scaling. We are moving away from a period of algorithmic optimization toward a massive, capital-intensive race for the foundational layers of the digital economy.
It is no longer just about who has the best code, but who has the most power.
The implication runs deeper. That tension is best captured by the current global scramble for the hardware and energy required to sustain modern intelligence.
We begin with the great infrastructure race, the intensifying competition over compute, energy, and silicon. OpenAI just raised over $120 billion this past March, a figure so large it essentially renders the term startup obsolete. Today, we're looking at the great infrastructure race, the massive high-stakes scramble for compute, energy, and silicon that is currently reshaping the global economy.
It really is a fundamental shift in how we value tech companies, because we're moving from a standard product cycle into a massive capital formation cycle. We are seeing a structural divide between the companies spending the money, the AI model labs, and the companies receiving it, specifically the ones providing the picks and shovels like memory, networking, and energy.
It's the classic gold rush logic. Don't bother digging for gold if you can just sell the shovels, the pickaxes, and the overpriced dehydrated rations to the people doing the digging.
And that's why the picks and shovels trend in fiber and memory infrastructure is expected to remain strong through 2027. We're seeing a supply-demand inversion where the demand for specialized hardware, like NVIDIA's Blackwell or the upcoming Vera Rubin platform, is creating a multi-billion dollar backlog. Even Jensen Huang has confirmed that NVIDIA is certifying Samsung, SK Hynix, and Micron to supply HBM4 memory to meet this, essentially using the relationship with SK Hynix to exert competitive pressure on Samsung to keep pace.
So the big players are basically playing a game of who can build the biggest, most expensive, and most power-hungry box to see if anyone actually shows up to play with it.
It's more of a strategic arms race. As the All-In crew noted, the economic unit of AI scaling can be framed as gigawatts to cash, where a single gigawatt of power is estimated to translate to approximately $10 billion in annual revenue for a player like OpenAI. This is driving a vertical wall of demand for land, specialized talent, and most importantly, energy. We're seeing massive built-to-suit projects, like the 1-gigawatt Oracle-related data center in Michigan or the OpenAI and SoftBank Energy Partnership in Texas, which signal a move away from renting cloud space toward direct, heavy ownership of physical infrastructure.
Which sounds lovely, provided you don't mind your company's balance sheet looking like a utility provider's ledger, complete with massive depreciation and the sudden, urgent need to buy your own nuclear reactor.
But that capital intensity is a defensive necessity. Alphabet's $80 billion equity raise, for instance, is a signal that even massive cash reserves aren't enough to secure the necessary compute capacity. There is a growing, inflationary feedback loop, where the intense demand for specialized infrastructure and data centers is actually driving up the cost of the very hardware and power required to sustain further investment.
It's an expensive cycle of trying to outspend your competitors until everyone is just broke and surrounded by very impressive, very hot radiators.
But there is a way out through efficiency. Decoder with Nilay Patel pointed out that Microsoft is leveraging custom silicon, like the Maia 200 chip, to achieve a co-design advantage. By optimizing the hardware and the MAI Thinking 1 model together, they've achieved a 30% cost reduction and a 1.4 times performance per watt improvement. This is critical because, as the All-In analysts argued, the next major technological shift will involve the disaggregation of inference, prefill, and decode, requiring entirely new networking architectures to manage these complex, fragmented workloads.
So we are essentially moving from a single, giant, expensive brain in the cloud to a fragmented, twitchy nervous system spread across the entire planet.
We're seeing the emergence of a nested chain of processing. The future architecture involves lightweight edge devices, smart badges, earbuds, or even wearables, handling simple, low-latency tasks using local classifiers, and only triggering high-latency cloud computing for complex, multi-step reasoning. This solves the counterfactual of latency problem that the All-In hosts highlighted. If an AI interface lags even slightly, users will simply abandon it. We're also seeing the compute burden migrate from the CPU to specialized neural processors and GPUs, much like the shift we saw 15 years ago.
It's also moving into orbit. I assume we're not just building bigger warehouses in Texas, but also launching giant glowing space servers that we can cool with the vacuum of the void.
That is exactly what's happening. Decoder with Nilay Patel noted that Elon Musk is executing a strategic pivot from a launch and satellite business model to an orbital data center model to artificially inflate the company's total addressable market to an unprecedented $28 trillion. We are moving from massive, single-structure orbital data centers to distributed constellations of smaller nodes. According to Bloomberg Tech, This is driven by the transition of AI workloads from centralized training to decentralized inference, which requires 20 gigawatts of compute spread across 88,000 nodes rather than a single 5-gigawatt cluster. Companies like StarCloud are even emerging to act as multi-tenant cloud providers in space.
So in the future, my personal AI agent will be running on a tiny satellite orbiting over the Atlantic, occasionally interrupted by solar flares or a particularly aggressive piece of space debris.
It's a high-stakes gamble. The expansion of the SpaceX and xAI ecosystem creates a sprawling empire where massive annual losses in AI infrastructure must be offset by dominant launch and satellite revenues. But the underlying trend is a massive deflationary curve in the cost of intelligence. The All-In team highlighted that the deprecation cost dropped by roughly 97% from GPT-4 to GPT-4.5. Even as we scale, the dollars per token bottleneck is being solved by shifting compute from the cloud back to local AI-native hardware, like the NVIDIA RTX Spark Superchip, which integrates ARM CPUs and parallel processing into a single system on a chip.
It's a strange paradox. We are building the most massive, energy-hungry, earth-shattering infrastructure in human history, also that eventually my smartphone can summarize an email without needing to ask a satellite for permission.
The goal is to make the cost of intelligence effectively zero.
Investors in the energy and semiconductor sectors need to watch how much of that alphabet-style equity-heavy fundraising actually translates into operational capacity. Keep an eye on the power grid stability in Texas. If the built-to-suit data center boom outpaces utility upgrades, the whole hardware race might hit a literal wall of darkness. But if the infrastructure is this expensive to build, it makes you wonder who is actually going to be left with the check when the first wave of these trillion-dollar IPOs finally hits the market.
Maya, I was looking at the projected IPO calendar for the rest of the year, and the sheer scale of the capital formation coming toward the public markets is, quite frankly, staggering.
You say staggering, I say, is there enough liquidity in the world to cover this, or are we just printing more money for the tech elite?
It's not just a trickle. We're looking at a massive wave of mega-scale listings, specifically from the likes of SpaceX, Anthropic, and OpenAI, where the combined valuation sought by these three alone could potentially exceed the total value of every U.S. venture-backed public listing from the last entire decade.
So we're not just talking about a few more tech companies hitting the street. We're talking about a fundamental liquidity event that could actually exhaust the market's available cash.
Stepping back, it's not just about the size, it's about the structural nature of these companies. Hard Fork noted that the SpaceX IPO, which is being valued anywhere between $1.75 trillion and $2 trillion, represents a shift toward a Frankenstein conglomerate model. You have highly profitable, moated businesses like Starlink and its reusable rocket tech bundled together with much higher risk, loss-leading ventures like X and xAI.
A Frankenstein model. That sounds like a very expensive way to accidentally create a monster that eats your entire portfolio.
While the risk is real because the ecosystem is so tightly interconnected. If you look at Anthropic, they are part of this high-stakes web where their reliance on SpaceX for compute means a single failure in the IPO pipeline for one firm could trigger a domino effect across the others.
It's like a high-stakes game of Jenga, but the blocks are made of trillion-dollar valuations.
It gets even more intense when you look at the velocity of this growth. Kara Swisher highlighted that Anthropic has reached a valuation of approximately $965 billion following a $65 billion funding round. To go from a startup to nearly a trillion-dollar valuation in just 5 years is what she calls financial teleportation. It fundamentally changes how fast capital can be formed and deployed.
Financial teleportation. I love that. It's much more poetic than extreme, potentially unsustainable capital inflation.
But there is a logic to the scale. All In with Chamath, Jason Sachs, and Friedberg pointed out that while the probability of a standard unicorn reaching decacorn status is only about 8%, the probability actually trends upward as the company gets larger. Centicorns with valuations over $100 billion have a 31% chance of delivering a 10 times return. The market is essentially betting on the winners becoming even more dominant.
So the math says bet on the giants. But doesn't that create a massive imbalance? If all the money is flowing into these few centicorns, what happens to the rest of the ecosystem?
The ecosystem is already shifting. We're seeing a move from quantity to quality in venture capital, with a fivefold increase in funding per unicorn since 2021, even as the total number of new unicorns has actually dropped. At the same time, secondary markets are no longer just an exit for early investors. 2025 data shows secondary transactions now represent 31% of all primary venture activity. The exit is becoming a permanent, parallel structure to the IPO.
It sounds like a closed loop. Investors move money from old privates to new privates, and the public markets are just left trying to catch the overflow.
And some players are already trying to front-run that overflow. Pivot reported that Alphabet is initiating a capital front-running trend by using massive equity offerings, like their recent $80 billion move, to capture the pool of cheap money looking for AI exposure. They are essentially offering a lower risk, more stable alternative to the high-uncertainty IPO market of OpenAI or Anthropic.
It's a strategic way to say, if you're too scared to bet on the trillion-dollar unknowns, come buy our guaranteed AI growth instead.
There's a signal here, even Google's decision to issue equity to Berkshire Hathaway, as Ben Thompson analyzed in Stratechery, suggests a shift toward a capital company model. The primary strategic advantage is moving away from just having better code or better models, and toward the ability to leverage massive capital as a fundamental liquid commodity.
So the ultimate moat isn't just your neural network, it's just having the biggest pile of cash to outspend everyone else.
It's a massive concentration of power and it carries systemic risks. Pivot argued that the U.S. economy is facing a systemic recession risk because 93% of GDP growth is currently driven by AI capex. If we see a 40% to 70% valuation correction in the magnificent 10 tech stocks, the entire national economy is vulnerable.
And there's a weird side effect to all this wealth, too.
You mean the third wave of philanthropy? Hard Fork mentioned that the upcoming AI IPO wave could drive unprecedented funding into incredibly niche areas, everything from pandemic prevention to, quite literally, shrimp welfare, simply because of the effective altruism commitments embedded in the founders' and employees' structures.
So as the giants grow, they might accidentally fund a global revolution in crustacean rights.
It's a wilder world than the one we were in 5 years ago.
Institutional investors need to stop treating these private valuations as disconnected from the broader macro stability. Watch for the first major quarterly earnings miss from a magnificent 10 player, because that will reveal if the AI capex engine is actually driving growth or just inflating a bubble. But if the capital is this concentrated, I wonder how much autonomy we'll have left when these software agents start handling our entire workflows for us. I tried to book a flight this morning and ended up in a recursive loop with a chatbot that seemed more interested in my credit card expiry than my destination. It felt less like intelligent assistance and more like a digital hostage situation.
That's because we're still stuck in the V1 UI phase, Maya. We're currently living in the era of the chatbot, which is really just a glorified text box. But the industry is moving towards something called the agentic era, where the interface isn't a chat window you talk to, but a background workflow that actually executes tasks for you.
Agentic workflows. That sounds like a corporate euphemism for we're replacing your entire software stack with a black box that we hope doesn't hallucinate your bank balance away.
It's more about the architecture changing. Think about the Model Context Protocol, or MCP, that OpenAI is pushing. Instead of you manually digging through a Zillow listing, the agent uses MCP to interact with the platform's data and even serve a custom HTML-based widget like a live map directly in the interface. It moves from simple data extraction to active state manipulation, where the agent can actually save properties to your favorites list.
So instead of me clicking buttons, a digital ghost is clicking them for me.
Worth noting, this is fundamentally rewriting what software engineering even means. As Adam Stashwiak and others have noted, the developer's role is shifting from writing individual lines of computing logic to designing high-level architectures and managing codex agents. The code itself is becoming a cheap commodity. The real engineering challenge is drawing the right boxes, defining how these autonomous components interface without creating a total mess.
Which sounds like a nightmare for anyone trying to keep a budget. If these agents are just spinning up new services and provisioning resources on their own, how do you stop the cloud bill from looking like a phone number?
That is a massive risk. There's a real fear of unstructured mess creation where agents, lacking human-designed guardrails, might autonomously provision and delete things like Lambda functions or load balancers, creating massive infrastructure sprawl. It's why we're seeing a shift towards zero-token architecture, trying to find patterns and reusable functions so we aren't just using expensive gen AI to repeatedly generate the same block of code.
It's also a massive headache for security. If we have trillions of these things running around, how do you even know which agent is allowed to touch which database?
That's the auth for agents problem. The changelog highlighted that this is becoming a three-tier architectural challenge. You need data access integration to connect agents to silos like Salesforce, authorization to prevent them from going off the rails, and identity to establish unique identifiers for every agent in the enterprise. We're moving toward a world where even HR departments will onboard digital agents with their own unique emails and Slack identities.
It's getting crowded. I heard Cloudflare reported that automated traffic has already surpassed human-driven traffic, accounting for 58% of all HTTP requests. We're essentially entering a machine-majority web.
And that's where the power dynamics shift. Stratechery by Ben Thompson pointed out that a company's competitive moat is moving from scale to tacit knowledge. It's about building private, proprietary reinforcement learning trajectories so that a model can be optimized for your specific, unique standards. Even Microsoft is pivoting, Satya Nadella is positioning them as a provider of multi-tenant learning systems where companies run their own hill-climbing machines using private data.
So the goal is to build a digital brain that knows exactly how your company operates, but only if you can afford the token capital to run it.
We can trace that further. It's a shift from a centralized mobile hub model to a constellation of devices. We're seeing this in Microsoft's Project Solara, where the cloud is the central intelligence hub and your edge devices, your wearables, your laptop, your car, are just spokes for background agentic work.
Enterprise IT managers need to start auditing the identity of every new script running in their environment. Keep an eye on the adoption of the Model Context Protocol. If we see major retailers like Expedia or Zillow integrating full interactive widgets into chat interfaces, the era of the standalone website might actually be nearing its end. But as these autonomous agents start running the back end of our entire economy, the stakes for how we defend those systems against automated warfare are getting much higher. We are currently caught in a pincer movement between two massive accelerating forces: the sheer, unmanageable volume of new digital vulnerabilities and the arrival of autonomous systems capable of exploiting them without a human ever touching a keyboard. If you had to bet, Alex, which side is winning the arms race in cybersecurity in this age of AI-driven warfare?
If we're looking at the raw numbers, the attackers have a massive head start. Cloudflare data shows that automated traffic from bots and AI agents now accounts for nearly 58% of all HTTP requests, meaning the internet has officially transitioned from a human-browsed medium to one navigated primarily by software agents.
So the internet is increasingly just a bunch of bots talking to other bots, while we humans just sit there providing the credentials they need to impersonate us.
And it's becoming much more surgical. We've documented the first fully autonomous agent-driven container scape, where an AI attacker used a Marimo notebook vulnerability to systematically probe, escalate privileges, and steal Kubernetes secrets without any human intervention. It's not just about broad scans anymore. It's about agentic attacks where the AI chains multiple stages of an exploit together autonomously.
It sounds less like a hack and more like a highly efficient, uninvited digital employee.
That's a perfect way to frame the insider threat. These agents can operate within existing user permissions to summarize, archive, and exfiltrate sensitive enterprise data via browser extensions. Even the supply chain is becoming self-replicating. The Miasma Worm campaign uses compromised maintainer accounts and malicious NPM build processes to execute code during installation.
And I assume the defenders are at least attempting to keep up.
It's a struggle. The National Vulnerability Database is facing a functional crisis because the backlog of unprocessed vulnerabilities more than doubled from 13,000 in February 2024 to over 27,000 by the end of 2025, largely because NIST stopped funding the necessary data processing contractors. On the flip side, the NSA is trying to bridge the gap. Through a partnership with Anthropic, they are deploying the Mythos model, which can compress multi-year security audit timelines into mere weeks, identifying vulnerabilities in 6 weeks that would traditionally take 5 to 7 years of human effort.
So we're replacing human error with machine speed discovery, but the machines might just be finding the holes faster than we can patch them.
That's the fear. Even Nikesh Arora noted during an all-in discussion that a 30% false positive rate in code vulnerability detection makes current AI tools more effective for attackers than defenders. It's also becoming much harder to hide proprietary IP. The rapid decline in model size means entire model weights can now fit on a USB stick, allowing for the distillation and replication of intellectual property within 24 to 48 hours of a new release.
It's a bit unsettling to think that a piece of software could basically learn to be a spy overnight.
It's even more visceral when you look at the physical layer, specifically GPS. We are seeing a massive rise in signal manipulation. In the Strait of Hormuz, maritime spoofing has actually shown vessels as being on land, which is a nightmare for global trade lanes. CyberWire Daily described an even more insidious version called meaconing, where attackers capture legitimate GNSS signals and rebroadcast them with a slight delay or increased strength to trick receivers into accepting a fraudulent signal as authentic.
So it's not just blocking the signal, it's gaslighting the hardware.
So here's the picture: while jamming is just overwhelming the signal with noise, like a foghorn drowning out a bird chirp, spoofing manipulates the data itself. This is especially critical in modern drone warfare, where the goal isn't necessarily to destroy the drone, but to degrade its precision so it misses primary targets and hits secondary structures instead.
It's the ultimate way to achieve chaos without ever firing a shot.
And it's moving into our very identities. The Blue Norof Group has moved beyond simple phishing to a sophisticated production pipeline for fraud. They use Adobe Premiere Pro to edit stolen footage and scrape YouTube to create convincing, person-specific fake meeting environments. They can even use the GetUser Media API to gain live access to your webcam and microphone during a call.
I suppose it's much easier to steal a company when you can just become the CEO in a high-definition deepfake.
It's much more efficient. The Pink Cybercrime Group is already doing this by using legitimate Microsoft 365 tools and voice phishing to bypass traditional malware detection entirely. They aren't even using files, they are just using credentials to move through the system.
Security teams need to stop looking for malware and start looking for behavioral anomalies in their automated traffic.
They have to. We're moving toward a machine's meeting machine's defense, where we might need agent moderators to act as circuit breakers when an autonomous agent starts acting outside of established norms.
Developers need to move toward strictly authenticated, hardware-bound identity management before these automated pipelines become the industry standard.
Just watch for the next major breach in an AI-powered account recovery system. If an attacker can trick a chatbot into swapping an email address, the human element is officially bypassed.
But that brings us to a much larger question of how the way we pay for software is fundamentally changing as we move away from simple per-user licenses. Are we really expected to believe that the entire multi-billion dollar SaaS industry is just evaporating? It sounds less like a market shift and more like a tech bro fever dream.
It's not evaporation, Maya. It's a structural reconfiguration of how value is captured. We're moving from a per-seat subscription model to a pure consumption-based economy.
Right, because paying for a license is just too much work when you could instead pay for every single automated thought an AI agent has.
The data tells a story. Jason on the All In podcast argued that the SaaSpocalypse is driven by the death of analytical SaaS. Companies no longer need intermediary software modules to interpret data when they can simply run LLMs directly against their existing datasets. When the software layer becomes an invisible agent interacting with a backend database, the traditional user interface and the seat license tied to it becomes obsolete.
Okay, so the SaaS part of SaaS dies and we're left with a system of work where humans just watch. I feel like I'm describing a ghost town.
It's more efficient than that. We're seeing a shift where integrated AI workflows can reduce enterprise software expenses by up to 90% by replacing those traditional seats. This creates a massive replacement TAM where growth comes from displacing existing inferior software budgets rather than inventing new categories.
Honestly, discussing the systematic dismantling of global software revenues as a growth opportunity is the peak of 2026 absurdity.
It is a massive disruption, but it's not a free-for-all. As the A16Z show noted, foundation model providers face a structural risk of becoming mere commodity infrastructure, much like mobile network operators who built the networks but lost the value to the application layer. The real winners are the platforms with low-cost, high-volume defensive moats, like Microsoft.
Enterprise procurement officers need to stop budgeting for headcount and start auditing API call volumes.
Watch for the first major Tier 1 ERP provider to report a massive decline in seat-based renewals, alongside a spike in usage-based credit consumption.
As we wrap up this week's deep dive, it's clear that we aren't just witnessing a technological upgrade, we are watching the complete reconfiguration of the digital foundation. We've tracked a massive migration of value, where the competitive edge is moving out of the abstract realm of clever code and into the heavy physical reality of power grids, specialized silicon, and massive energy reserves.
That's the critical takeaway. The throughline here is the transition from intelligence as a software feature to intelligence as a heavy industrial commodity. This shift fundamentally alters the calculus for the modern CTO. In the previous era, your primary strategic concern was optimizing your model's accuracy or your user interface. Today, that person's mandate has shifted towards securing the physical supply chain and energy throughput. If you don't have access to the gigawatt-scale infrastructure or the HBM4 memory density, the most sophisticated algorithm in the world becomes a stranded asset. We are moving from a world of managing logic to a world of managing physical capacity.
And that physical expansion is happening alongside a total structural breakdown in how software is even consumed. As agentic workflows begin to replace human-operated interfaces, the very concept of a user is dissolving into a sea of automated machine-to-machine interactions. This isn't just a new way to use apps, it's a total replacement of the web's architecture.
It's a telling detail. But all of this, the massive capex, the shift to consumption-based APIs, and the rise of autonomous web traffic, rests on one assumption, that the returns on this unprecedented capital formation will materialize before the liquidity dries up. Know if this thesis holds, keep a very close eye on the upcoming quarterly earnings from the hyperscalers, specifically looking for any meaningful divergence between their massive infrastructure spending and their actual growth in API-driven revenue. If the revenue doesn't scale alongside the megawatts, the entire tower becomes much more fragile.
Thanks for joining us for this Tuesday edition. We'll see you next week.